everyone, and welcome to Minute 116 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minutes, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Heather Baxendale of Word of Hellmouth Podcast. That's actually a mouthful to say, but welcome to the show, Heather.
Hello, and thank you for having me on.
I'm always happy to have you on. It's, you know, but I think there's something wrong. They're coming back down. So you should just... Who knows? So minute 116 begins with John shooting into the air every which way and ends with Eddie alerting Hans. So basically... on Friday, we ended things in the middle of the climax of this movie, where there's just a lot of shooting going on. You know, the FBI guys are trying to figure out what they're going to do. John's on the roof. He was searching for Holly. He couldn't find her. You know, he finally found out that that they took her to the vault, which he doesn't really know where that is, even though he's sort of given directions by Ginny. Who knows? And then he sees the helicopters coming and he decides that he's going to scare everybody and he starts just shooting in the air. And this minute continues with that. He's just shooting blindly into the air. Now, my first question that I'm going to ask, and I asked this on Friday also, but isn't he worried that he's going to actually hit these helicopters or hit something?
That's what I was thinking about too. I'm like, I understand that he goes full cowboy at this point, but... There is certainly some inner danger of fire going elsewhere or harming the chopper or someone in the chopper.
Exactly.
At that point.
I mean, we already established weeks ago that it wasn't John who shot up Al's car. You know, even though up until doing this show, I always thought that's what happened. I thought it was John who shot a machine gun, you know, and machine gunned Al's car after he threw out, you know, Franco's body. Marco's body. Franco is a different guy. They it's really silly that they have two terrorists named Franco and Marco. You know, they should have just like thought of something else. You know,
they're henchmen.
They're henchmen, but I'm saying it's not like they're Tweedledee and Tweedledum, you know.
Not if you want to differentiate between them.
Exactly. You have to differentiate with them. And I've gotten them confused. I mean, I know who each of them are, but I've gotten the names confused for obvious reasons. So he throws Marco out of the window, right? And then someone starts shooting. And we actually figured out that because of the angle of where we see the shots coming from, it's not coming from the 30-plus floor. It's coming from, like, the second or third floor. And there is one of the terrorists there, Alexander. And the script actually proved that it was Alexander who was shooting.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, it's something I'd never thought about before. So when I proved that it was Alexander, it made a lot more sense because I said, okay, why would John risk trying to injure Al? And that goes to my question that we have here. Why would he do something that could potentially be injuring, you know, he doesn't know it's the FBI or whatever it is, but he knows these are friendly helicopters, theoretically. You know.
Yeah. Isn't he's the one who yells, "I'm on your side, a-hole," isn't he?
That's right.
When they start firing at him.
Yes.
So, and which I was also wondering, why was he surprised that they fired at him after he was shooting in the air? And like you said, no matter what, there's definitely a risk factor of him hitting them, anyone in the chopper, but also there's still tons of debris. There's still parts of the building all over the place where he could have hit something and it could have ricocheted too.
Exactly.
And hit one of the hostages. I mean, it's definitely a high octane moment and it moves so quickly that you certainly don't pick up on it as much if you're just sitting and watching the movie. The moments go by slow but fast at the same time. But most of the movie seems very, very specific that there's intent behind. I mean, John McTiernan is the kind of director who does that. Every little moment does count and it does have some point to it. There's not just filler crap in there. It's part of the reasons why his movies are so suspenseful and there's so much tension and the action is so great.
Mm-hmm.
like every little sequence. And that's one of the things I was really appreciating about watching it this way too. But that one is the one that I literally, I on my notes, I have chopper guns, question mark. Like what was going on? Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the intent was. And I haven't been able to come up with anything that was logical other than he was just essentially hot.
Yeah. That's what it comes down to. I mean, you also have the whole idea that you know, the Johnsons are no longer sympathetic at all. You know, they were comedic at the beginning, and by the lines that they said, you know, last week, I think it was on Thursday, you know, where they go, oh, I can live with 20-25% casualties of the hostages. You know, it's like at that point, you don't really care what's going to happen to them because they don't care what's going to happen to anyone else.
No, complete reckless abandonment at this point.
Yeah, for sure. And basically, at this point, you know, first of all, I like the way that John shoots in a, I guess you'd say a parabolic fashion. You know, the way that he swings the gun in a very straight. I mean, I don't know if you've ever shot automatic weapons, but you don't do that.
Yeah, I own an automatic weapon. I have my own assault rifle.
Okay.
So, no, typically you don't. There's just recoil alone. It's difficult to do that. And this is, I think this is an MP5 that he's using too. I'm not 100% sure on that.
Yeah. This movie uses MP5s, and we will actually talk later in this week why the script needed to have MP5s. But we'll get there.
I was curious about that. Yeah, because I have a comment on his sidearm as well.
Yes.
Which I have for notes for later in the week also.
Yeah.
But as far as that goes too, I mean, that's one of those things that you put a suspension of disbelief in, I think, when it comes to movies. It's like the person who's able to kick in the door. It's you know, big guns not having that typical recoil or behaving the way they're shooting blanks most of the time.
Or the fact that everyone has magic guns that can shoot as many bullets as they want.
Yes.
Until the script needs them. Until the script needs them to run out.
Which also we'll get to later this week. But I mean, yeah, those are all tropes that we buy and we lock into. There are things that will, as a person who's grown up with guns, I come from a military family, a police family, and a hunting family. So we were taught the proper way to respect and use guns growing up in my family.
Yeah, which John McClane doesn't follow those rules.
No, but I always look at him too. Is in the back of my mind, I always hear cowboy in my head. John McClane is an effing cowboy, and that's kind of it too. So the rules don't entirely exist for him, but yeah, he almost has like a dance. There's a certain almost elegance to him shooting, and it looks really great on screen. I mean, all of it looks amazing, and that is where it's incredibly successful. But as far as attaching that to realism, no, there's two definitely reality and fantasy are not meeting in the middle on that at all.
For sure, there's no question. But again, that's what makes this fun. You know,
exactly. Well, I mean, who wants to write a story that's completely real either? The reason we tell these stories is because it's an escape from reality to some degree. And our heroes have to have some level of superpowers.
Right.
So McClane gets his with his cowboy gun antics.
Yeah, but I mean, part of the whole thing here also is that you know, he's an everyman.
Yes. Those are my favorite stories, by the way. All of my favorite action heroes, with the exception of, you know, Arnold or Sly, when they come in, those are the exceptions for me. But in general, the everyman action heroes, the every guy who just kind of shows up. Like, I mean, that's one of the things I love about the character of Ellen Ripley so much. She just is a normal person who gets put in extraordinary circumstances and she rises to the occasion.
In the future.
Yeah, in the future, but again, fantasy. But however, it's that situation that I like so much.
Yeah,
and
okay,
and if you connect to it also gives you as a viewer the maybe I could do that. No, we couldn't. They can't even do that. But
that's
but it
right.
Makes it fun.
That's why they use stunt doubles.
Yes, unless you're Tom Cruise.
Yes.
But he's an alien.
I think his you know, his stories are a little over bloated. I think I'm not saying he doesn't do most of his stunts, but I'm sure that there are stunts that people think he does that you know he hasn't that he doesn't do anymore. You know.
Okay, listen, I believe Tom Cruise does everything. And I only believe it because he is not human. He is an alien. And I think that's a compliment. I haven't decided yet.
Maybe. I don't know. But we're not here to talk about Tom Cruise.
No, we're not. We're back to Brucey and John McClane. Exactly. And Yippee-ki-yay exactly. Time.
That's right. So at this point, then we see a shot from within the chopper. So we have Big Johnson, you know, noticing that John is shooting in the air, and he orders the gunman next to him to shoot at John. And he goes, "Nail that sucker." And I mean, they do a great job because John continues shooting into the air, and then we see like the bullets ripping through the I guess you could say the floor of the roof, because that's where he's standing. You know, he starts running from the whole thing, and then John starts to run towards us as all like the hostages around him start scattering in all different directions. You know, it looks like a Benny Hill type of situation where they're just running around. No one really knows where they need to go.
It's utter chaos. Everybody's just panicking. Panic and madness.
Yeah, and then John finds like this niche to jump into and duck to hide. From where they're being shot. Now, I guess it's reached a point where John doesn't care about the hostages anymore either. He knows Holly's not there. So, you know what? I'm just going to, save myself at this point.
Well, yeah. It's man unhinged at this part. He's literally just trying to save his wife. He's tried to do more and looked at the bigger spectrum up to this point. But now it's the end of the rope. He has one option. If he can only save one person, it's going to be his wife.
Correct.
And we're going to get into that. But McTiernan has not forgotten either that there still are a bunch of innocent people there running about. And that's when you get those shots in of them running around, which is, I feel like Die Hard is probably one of the movies that does it the best, where they balance the humor with the action and the tension. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the humor, because it's delivered appropriately, it gives a release of some of that build, which also gives it the opportunity to build again, which is why it feels like you're on this wild roller coaster.
Right.
But smart directors, you see them do it all the time, where you have those shots that pan to the innocent people that are... I mean, do we know who they are? No, but they're innocent people, and we don't want them to die. It's not a thought that you actually like invest in, but your brain processes it enough that you're acknowledging it. But that's why you only get a second of it, and you only see them, but you don't actually see them as people. It's just an idea, and it's there, and it works.
Right. The only person who sees a person there is Ginny. Who gets to lie down on a couch, which everyone probably was very jealous of her.
I was. I'm jealous of her right now. there's this little side anecdote, which I kind of didn't even think about until I'd watched it again. But Robert Davi, he's such a fun bad guy as it is. He's the sniper who says he's gonna take him out. Yeah. He's the sniper guy who's gonna take him out. Blah blah blah.
Yeah. That's tomorrow. We'll get to that. But yeah.
Yes. But he's played. He's kind of played the Hans Gruber part in a TV show before. He was a villain on Stargate Atlantis eons ago, back in like 2004, 2005. He was this.
He was a James Bond villain also.
Yes, he's a great villain, and he has a really, really terrifying, intimidating face where you wouldn't want to cross this guy.
Right. License to Kill is one of my favorite James Bond movies. I think it's done really, really well.
And he's fantastic. But in this one, he's the bad guy. He goes and takes over Atlantis and holds the entire city hostage. And in the midst of it all, there's this hurricane going on and there's no power in the city. And the character in this show is John Shepard. And he's doing pretty much what John McClane does in Die Hard, where he's climbing through the whole city trying to get to Robert Davi so he can take him out and take the city back.
Do you think they did it on purpose?
No, not at all. This was a buildup over a couple of seasons. Cole Meany was actually the main villain for a bit with this particular group. But I think that was his last episode on there too. But it was really cool, and it never even occurred to me until I rewatched this and saw him, and it came to me. I'm like, neat.
Oh, wow.
So not relevant to Die Hard specifically, but relevant to Die Hard.
Yeah. No, I mean, well, I haven't personally seen it. So, Atlantis. So I couldn't comment on it. But I know that Robert Davi is a great actor, and also is a great villain. And here his character isn't a villain, but he's somewhat reprehensible.
Yes. Certainly that.
Yeah. And then John, who's lying on the ground hiding right now, screams, "I'm on your side, you assholes."
I know.
And the funny thing that I find about that is that how would they know that? You know, like how does he expect whoever's in the helicopter to know that he's on their side?
I know. And I'm with him. I mean, we're rooting for him, but like you said, how are you frustrated with them when you literally were just running around, you're covered in blood, you're using one of the terrorist guns, and you're shooting what appears to be erratically with no concern for the hostages or the incoming chopper.
Correct.
So yeah, but again, I'm supposing at this point that, rational thinking isn't necessarily in his mind. He's in full on survival mode and extra ubered up, shoot him up, testosterone.
Right.
And
It's
that
true.
was in charge.
Yeah, pretty much. That
But I
that's
mean,
the way it works.
yeah, but I mean, look at it too. I mean, I had a lot of fun looking at the scripts for each of these days and what the dialogue actually was. And it's a page or less than a page for all of them. And it's mostly screaming and shouting and cursing.
Yes, and grunting.
Yes. But it totally works, which is where it comes down to. This is definitely a visual landscape that we're embracing, and we're relying on that and then the performance of our stars.
Yeah. And I mean, at this point comes the line that you mentioned, that Big Johnson then goes, "Oh, swing around again, I'll bag this little bastard." You know, he's quite confident in himself that he's, able to shoot this quote unquote terrorist or whoever it is that he thinks is there. You know, he's a little overconfident.
Well, in general, snipers are, and they should be, they're precision artists and typically don't take shots that they can't make. However, this scenario is not one of those situations. First of all, he's in a chopper, which is not ideal for the most part. Not that trained snipers haven't shot out of choppers before, they certainly have and can, but you have a moving target, you have explosions everywhere at this point. You have no idea if there are going to be any more targets coming up shooting at them as well. There's just so many different quantifiable variables that you can't be sure that you're going to. However, he makes you believe it,
Yes.
which follows up with McClane responding in kind to the threat, even though he hasn't heard him say it himself.
And then at that point we see the Huey once again circle around in order of, which again the editing in this movie is amazing the way that they do this.
Oh, it looks great. I mean, that the joy I had from just watching the sequence, and I made sure I watched each of them through slowly multiple times too. And sometimes I do that just to make sure I get everything and I'm not missing anything, or if there's anything cool that's there that I didn't see before. This time I did it just out of pure joy, and appreciation for what I was looking at. It's absolutely incredible. There isn't a second that doesn't look fantastic.
Correct. And I mean it's just great the way they put it all together. There's no question about that. And at this point they change the shot and we get to see the hostages as they're running down the staircase. And I love the way that we actually see them run past Carl, who's just hanging there.
Yes, Carl. And it is, you just, and it's not even like an obvious shot either. They don't pan to his body. You just see the side of his hair. It's just enough of that blonde and then his shoulder and his body to go, oh yeah, there he is. And nobody even looks up. These are people that have been through so much that were just at a Christmas party a few hours before. And now their lives have been flipped and turned upside down so drastically that they are not even aware of the fact, or they're aware, but they don't care. There's
That's
just
right.
a dead guy hanging right there. It's fine. It's fine. That's not even on the close to the top of their problems right now, the list of their problems.
Correct. And at that point, you know, it actually makes me wonder if the way that they show this, you know, since we know what's going to happen in the movie, you know, did someone like feel bad for him and like help him down or something like that? Because he looks like he's in a position where it's really difficult for him to get. I mean, again, spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen the next 15 minutes of this movie. Okay, but, you know, Carl is still alive. And, you know, but how does he get down from there so easily?
That's true.
Or even not easily, or not, you know, he has to somehow get down. I mean, his hands are slacking on the side. He's doing a great job of playing dead, but you'd think that someone has to help him down. I mean, Uli is dead, you know, so it can't be him. And we know that the four remaining terrorists downstairs, you know, Eddie, Hans, Christoph, and Theo are all downstairs. None of them are going to go back and look for Carl to try and figure out what they're going to do with him.
And if he could have gone down by himself, he already would have.
That's right.
So that's curious. I never thought about it before because it's just a big, well, yeah, I guess I was trying not to give anything away. But I guess if you're listening to the show, you've probably at least seen the movie once.
let's hope so.
I would assume so. I would hope so. I try not to jump to conclusions myself. But yeah, I mean, it's a surprise, but it's kind of an important piece. Why would he be left there and stuck there? But I guess they do that a lot in these kinds of movies too, where you have one of the bad guys that you thought was dead, and right at the end he pops up and he's alive and you're surprised that he was, and it was a shock.
Yeah.
I guess that happens sometimes.
I mean, the first time you see this movie, you're definitely going to be shocked about that. There's no question about that.
Yeah, yeah, but you don't, because of the shock, you don't think about it. But on repeat viewings, usually you pick up on that kind of thing.
Right.
And then after a while, if you love the movie, you don't care and don't think about it too much.
Correct, for sure. But again, he's just hanging there. So, like, how does he get down? Somebody must have helped him.
Okay, in our world where we're putting all the actual pieces together, which as a writer, it's important to do that, even if you're doing it behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. We'll say somebody helped him. I doubt it was a hostage. I doubt it was a hostage.
Probably not.
But somebody had to have helped him, unless he somehow figured out how to get himself down, which I feel like he would have done beforehand. There was too much going on.
And then the scene changes and we get to see John again. And John is looking around and he sees a, I guess you could say, a box that he opens up, you know, while he's on the roof trying to think of some way to save himself. And he opens the box and inside there is a fire hose.
Yeah. Okay. This is one of those great moments where you're like, oh, here is the axe in the glass or the fire hose here.
Yes. Now, what do you know about hose reels? It's known as a fire hose reel.
Okay. That was one of the things that I was thinking about, and I was going to go look it up, but I didn't want to talk about it before I looked it up. They're pretty strong. I feel like that would actually hold him. Now, whether or not it would stay up and wouldn't break off of the actual wheel itself, I can't say, particularly with the weight of his body eventually going over. But I feel like of all the crazy things and chances that he took, this one actually has some validity to it.
Okay.
In theory. Essentially, I think the hose has the ability to hold his weight safely. If it's actually holding onto something to where it will countermeasure him. That part is questionable.
Okay. That's fair. But I mean, my question more was, what do you know about hose reels in general? Not specifically about this one. Well, we'll get into today and tomorrow. We'll talk about, you know, whether this is plausible or not.
Okay.
So how long do you think a standard hose reel is?
It's got to be at least a couple hundred yards. I've seen enough that I know that they're long. And in a building like that and on the roof, I think it would be reasonable to say that it would be pretty damn long.
Okay. So according to the research that I did, the standard length is 30 meters. So it's 30 yards. It's about 100 feet. Yeah. It's not very long from that perspective.
No.
And
especially, you know, on the roof, I would anticipate it being much longer there.
Right. Okay, I would too. I can't measure. We can't measure the actual size of the hose in the movie, so that's why I had to go
No.
with what's the standard. Okay, so there are basically three different types of places that will have this type of contraption for a hose reel. Okay, the first is if you're in large areas or corridors, where even if you have a very large fire extinguisher, it won't provide a adequate cover in order to put out a fire. Okay. The second thing is buildings where the floor area exceeds 500 square meters. Okay, which I think is where I think this fits into that category. And then the third thing is where it's required for, in the area for fire safety or for insurance or things like that. My assumption is that, I mean, it's a good place to have it, and the script called for it. So that's why we have it here. That's what comes down to. Apparently you're not supposed to use it if there's an electrical fire or if you have flammable liquids around.
Really?
Yes. So I mean those are the things that I found out about the hose reels. But it was actually very simple finding even this basic information about it. That's what Mr. Google is for.
The more you know.
There you go. And knowing is half the battle. So John then starts, unspooling it as he walks towards the ledge. He's trying not to panic. You can see that he's trying not to panic. But then he goes, "What the f-? Jesus. Oh, John, what the f- are you doing? How the f- did you get into this shit?" And as he's saying this, he's taking the end of the hose and he's wrapping it around his waist. So, I mean, I gotta first say it doesn't look like he's tying it in a very in a tight enough knot that it should hold him. I mean, forgetting about what you started talking about before about whether, a hose could theoretically hold someone his size. That's a separate issue. But just the way that he ties himself up is not,
It's not going to
you
be
would expect
taut.
him to jump off the roof. You expect him to jump off the roof and have him plummet down and have the hose stay where it was because of the way that he's doing it. He's as he's putting it around, as he's tying it around himself. And then first of all, the music of this scene and in Tomorrow's Minute also is just amazing. It really amps up the way that all the suspense of the movie goes and stuff like that. So it's just done really, really well. And then, we have the hostages. Once again, we see that they're making a lot of noise as they're running on the 30th floor, and they alert Eddie, who comes out of the vault to see what's happening. And at this point, he has this like look of shock on his face. And then he runs back to the vault to alert Hans, and he goes, "There's something wrong. They're coming back down." Now, it's something we mentioned last week in the original script. Both Eddie and Uli were sent upstairs. It's pretty funny that they had to leave a character here,
Yeah, they
in
did.
order to.
Okay, too. So the part, I think the part where John is tying the hose up too, that almost feels like he's talking himself into it. All of his actual survival brain parts are saying, this is a very bad idea. This is how we die. Do not do this. And he's overwhelmed with, again, we're going with the machismo and the testosterone and all of it, to where he's going to override that. He has this button apparently in his head, as these everyman action heroes seem to do, to go, I'm going to do this anyway. And again, as you pointed out, it doesn't feel like he tied it tight enough, and it certainly doesn't feel like it would hold him at all. But we're counting down seconds here before we know things are going to hit the fan.
That is
So we're
correct.
right there with him too, and the music right then too. That's one of the moments where I feel like the music is really, really cueing into that high tension emotion, where you're the viewer and you're feeling that again with him. So when he does do all of that, yeah, you're starting to really, really feel that build up. And whether or not he's going to make it, which, you know he does. But at the same time, you're questioning it because everything is telling you that he shouldn't do this.
Right.
And then again, you're distracted by the chaos of the hostages and what else is going on. So while that's building and you might question something such as, did he tie that well enough? You don't have enough time to process that thought when you're watching and a normal viewing to sit there and actually consider it. You might think it for a second, but something else is happening so quickly with the hostages and otherwise that you don't have time to process it and actually think about it. And by the time you get back to it again, oopsie. We've moved exactly. on. And that's just clever editing. That's clever writing. And it's just done well. But yeah, it's certainly not. I don't think it's a safe choice. I think you can do it if you're John McClane and that's the rules. That's it.
I think you're right about that. I think that's the way it is. So do you have anything else you want to talk about before we get to the script?
No, that pretty much covers it. Yeah.
Okay, so the script for this week does a little mishmash of everything. We're going to really jump around because I just want to focus on the things that happen in this minute. But even though they intercut in the script between today, tomorrow, the next day, Friday, last Friday, all together. But so the first thing is that it says that McClane starts shooting and he says, and he fires over their heads. They scream, head for the door as he'd hoped. He fires again, raking a line across the roof. They really haul ass. Get below, now. And then it skips to Hans, which that's not part of what we're talking about here now. We'll get to that tomorrow. And then it says, the roof. McClane herds the last of the hostages inside, starts for the door himself. When with a roar and a chatter of rotors, the lead helicopter zooms overhead. McClane throws himself down on the ground, looks up as the chopper banks in a tight turn, and then from the open side, gunfire erupts. Shocked, McClane dives out of the way of the bullets that stitch across the door. Hostages on lower floors descending, screaming and howling as the chopper sweeps past the window on a loop back towards the roof. Both Johnsons fire away. Big Johnson, bank and we'll nail him. And then again, it goes back to Hans, and then we'll come back to this. It says, McClane dives away from another burst. You I'm on your side. They come in on another pass. Desperate, he looks around, sees a fire hose, makes up his mind. With the chopper looming up behind him, he slings Uli's weapon, runs to the fire hose, unreels 3 yards, loops it around his back and under his legs. He looks over the edge, hesitates. This. Bullets hit all around him. And that's pretty much all that it talks about from this minute itself. So I like the way they do it. I think in the movie it's tighter.
Yeah.
So it works a little better.
Yeah, it definitely does.
Yeah.
But
it's always fun looking at the differences between, what the script, obviously this is, I don't know if it can be the final script because, they would have made changes, but it's pretty close. So I like the way that they do this.
I do too. It definitely, again too. There's so many elements from different aspects that pulls together to make it all work. But it's so fast and it's so tight that you really don't have time to process any of the thinking. You're literally reacting to all the stimuli in front of you.
Right.
But gosh, all the shots of that chopper are just great. They're just great. I think some of my favorite shots. I forgot how great it really is. It had been a while since I'd watched it, surprisingly. I mean, for me, it's probably been like a couple years, which is a long time for me. This is one I usually watch at least once a year. So, and also too, when it's on now, I've seen it so many times. This is one of those that was just on repeat for me as a child and in our house as a family.
Yeah.
So it's one of those two where it can just be on. I hear it in the background, but I'm not watching it intensely while it's on because I know the movie. So there are little bits like that too that I'm it's making me appreciate it more than I even did before.
Great. I'm very happy to hear that.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Okay. So every Monday we have a segment called Die Hard on a Monday where my guest will give their top 5 Die Hard doppelganger films. So What have you got for us, Heather? Start with your number five and work your way up.
Okay. I tried to keep it as close. I tried to run with the terrorist as the bad guy and then the everyman thing to some degree, but I dabbled off a little bit.
Okay, that's fine. That's fair.
All right. So for my fifth one, I did Die Hard as a bodyguard with Man on Fire with Denzel Washington.
Okay.
Not technically terrorists, but it's
No, it's fine.
Yeah, but it's definitely that's one fair. Where you've got the one man who has to go off and fight through all the bad guys to save the day. So that, and I love that movie too. That's a good fun one. And this one, four, I have Die Hard as James Bond, which could be multiple James Bond films, but the one that I found that worked the best for me was GoldenEye. Mostly just because it's my favorite.
Okay. That's fine, too.
Yep. All right. Three, I have Die Hard as a convict, and that is Con Air, which I think is probably one of the closer ones, especially if we're referencing Die Hard 2. But Die Hard
I'm sure Jay and Mark are very happy that you listed it so high.
Oh, I love Con Air. It's so much fun. I actually just did their show a couple weeks ago. It's great.
Yeah, I know.
Such a good time. Oh,
I know. It was a great show. It was very fun listening to it.
Thank you. All right. And then this is one of the ones you suggested, but it was the first thing I thought of, and I love it. It's Die Hard on a bus. It's Speed. I love Speed.
Okay.
Yeah, of course. I know. But I know I could have tossed something else in there, but I love Speed. And it's a perfect example of this kind of movie, too. And then my number one is Die Hard as a James Cameron spy, and it's True Lies. and Arnold Schwarzenegger, as I noted, is not your everyman, but he does kind of do all of the crazy wild stuff by himself. I mean, he tries to jump a horse across two skyscrapers, so
yes, that he does. Now, it was very funny because when you said before Die Hard as James Bond, I was thinking that you were possibly going to be using True Lies there, because that's more or less what it is.
Yeah, it is. It is.
You know, he's an American, an American type James Bond. All right, great. So, Heather, you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you? Where can people find Heather Baxendale?
You guys can find me actually under my pen name, HB Walsh. You can find me as HB Walsh on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. You can find my book that was just released in July this year. It's The Prophecy, Part One Lost. You can find that on Amazon. Just look it up under the title or under HB Walsh and follow me. That would be fancy. Part Two comes out hopefully at the end of the year, if not early January. You can find me and Mark Armstead on Word of Hellmouth, our new Buffy the Vampire Slayer rewatch podcast. It will be on Patreon, and you can follow Rabbit Hole Podcast, and we will be on there.
All right. Very cool. And while you're doing that, go rate, review, and subscribe to any podcatcher you might be using to listen to this show. Finding me is very simple. All you have to do is a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Twitter, or you can find me on Facebook. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee!